The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can one call himself a Christian and be against health care for all? You know, in a roundabout way, our president asked this very question just a few days ago. President Obama held a conference call with certain select clergy. He pointed out the disinformation going around about his new health care bill. He warned the ministers not to be found guilty of bearing false witness. Get it? Wink, wink, nod, nod. You see, these are Bible believers, and the Bible tells us never to bear false witness. You don't want to bear false witness, do you? Ooh, what a timely, appropriate message from Obama, the self-professing Christian. Of course, Obama doesn't believe Jesus is the only way of salvation, even though Jesus clearly taught that he was. Obama believes only parts of the Bible are inspired. Which parts? The parts that do not contradict his leftist agenda, silly. The man who led Obama to Christ and pastored him for 20 years is a racist and an anti-Semite who gave Louis Farrakhan the Man of the Year award. Obama voted against the Illinois Infant Protection Act, thus promoting not abortion, but infanticide. I don't think I'm going out on too much of a limb to say that this one isn't compatible with Christianity either. President Obama, only God knows your heart, but according to your actions and according to your own stated beliefs, when you profess to be a Christian, it is you who bear false witness. So maybe you aren't in a position to lecture clergy simply because they do not agree with your health care proposal. And to you Obama supporters listening right now, please resist the temptation to defend Obama by pointing out something hypocritical about George Bush's Christianity. For one thing, Bush isn't president anymore. I don't know if you've noticed that. You can stop talking about him. He's not around anymore. He only becomes a convenient way of changing the subject and ignoring the deeds of our current president. For another thing, these moral equivalency arguments that try to equate the killing of innocent babies with the killing of terrorists in Iraq are also unbiblical to anyone who cares to honestly read the Bible. People have been asking me lately if I believe Obama will get reelected. After all, he's losing popularity, and his policies make our poor, disillusioned citizens want to run to the hills and scream. My answer depends upon how long freedom of speech remains truly free. Between hate speech laws and fairness doctrines regulating talk radio, Obama may just succeed in shutting down all opposition. He is a good speechmaker, and without anyone around to expose his lies, the man could get away with anything. However, public reaction is overflowing right now beyond the bounds of media. The current status of Democrat town hall meetings has proven as much. With all that's going on, it would be difficult to quiet free speech. At the very least, I think more than a year is needed to do so. And for this reason, I can at least make a prediction about the 2010 election. No, that does not affect Obama specifically, but if he loses his Congress, he loses his domestic power. With such qualifications in mind, I believe the Republicans will take back both the House and the Senate in 2010. I believe the Democrats are going to be tossed out so fast they'll never know what hit them. And then the likes of Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and Barbara Boxer will explain that they did not really lose the election. They will cry election fraud. They will claim that African Americans and others were intimidated and not allowed out to the polls. It will happen just exactly this way. I do not stand by these words because of any special insight. I say this because our Democratic Party has become just that predictable. In the meantime, let me offer a word of advice to the few Republicans that are in Congress right now. The Democrats are falling apart, and Obamacare may go the way of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. So please, I implore you, do not misuse your temporary momentum with something stupid like a bipartisan health care bill. And let this turkey completely die in time for Thanksgiving. Forget trying to impress the New York Times by showing them what a compassionate conservative you are. They will not be impressed. They will demonize you no matter what you do, so you may as well just do what's right. Besides, in the minds of liberals, the only true definition of bipartisanship is that Republicans do things the way Democrats want them done. So think of this and try to remember why there are so few of you in Washington right now. Your fellow conservatives felt betrayed. Do not betray them again, or 2010 will not only see less Democrats, but brand new Republicans measuring the drapes in your office. Meanwhile, once again, the left, when unable to win in the arena of ideas, stoops to name-calling. No surprises, to be sure, but one might have expected something better from our Speaker of the House. Nancy Pelosi has dismissed the uncounted numbers of vocal protesters at Democrat town hall forums by pointing out that such people bring swastikas to the meetings. Ah, that wild card of wild cards, the Nazi card. Let me tell you something, I'm Jewish. As a Jew whose own people were literally murdered by the real honest-to-goodness Nazis, I get awfully sick and tired of seeing people cry wolf. It minimizes the true blood-stained heritage of Hitler. Today's liberal definition of a Nazi seems to be anyone who disagrees with liberals. For the record, after Pelosi made her comment, people looked long and hard over the abundance of video footage at recent town hall meetings to find out what she was talking about. At first, they found nothing. Eventually, a picture surfaced of a woman holding a sign, and yes, this sign did indeed have a swastika. But there was a line drawn through the swastika, meaning that this woman was against Nazis. Bottom portions of the sign indicated that she was calling Obama a Nazi. Since then, we have discovered other activists carrying pictures of Obama with a Hitler-type message. Now, mind you, Pelosi fully realizes that 99.9% of the protesters did not carry such signs, but she's smart enough to know that the mainstream media will immediately seize upon whatever few kooks they can find, all the while dismissing the friendly, intelligent dissenters who characterize the main body of this reactionary movement. But her disingenuousness goes even further. By merely mentioning that people came to the meeting with swastikas, Ms. Pelosi was implying that these were Nazi sympathizers, not people worried that a movement similar to the Nazis might soon spread across our country. Now, I do believe it is wrong and unfair to call Obama a Nazi or compare him with Hitler. Okay? But such concern is a separate discussion. If Pelosi wanted to complain that Obama was being unjustly labeled, that would have been another matter altogether. It is true that Obama's view of infanticide and efforts to pit rich against poor remind us of very early Nazi ideas. There's no getting around that. But still, when we think of Nazism today, we envision death camps, gassings, and ovens. It would be cruel and foolish to hold Obama against those kinds of horrific deeds. Maybe it was only the early forms of Nazism that were in the minds of the protesters, but even so, funky signs do not advance any significant discussion. Volcanically charged Nazi symbols accomplish nothing and destroy credibility. While we're on the subject, I encourage anyone listening to do a quick Google search and see how often the left compared George Bush to Hitler the 8 years he was in office. Is it just me? I do not seem to recall Ms. Pelosi urging her constituents to stop such inflammatory talk. But then, why should she? Such integrity would not have advanced her own political career, and at the end of the day, that seems to be the only thing this disgraceful woman is all about. Speaking of town hall meetings, lots of chatter going on recently about Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, who both answered and talked on her cell phone in the middle of a question from a cancer-stricken lady in the town hall audience. Now, controversial as the whole town hall thing has been these last couple of weeks, I am willing to accept the possibility that Ms. Lee answered her phone innocently without any intentions of deliberate sabotage. Don't get me wrong. Despite her intentions, the result was still rudeness. In fact, it was incredibly rude, but not any more so than the way most people handle their cell phones these days. I have a cell phone myself, of course. It's a wonderful convenience, and I can barely remember anymore what it was like without one. How nice to be able to follow friends on a road trip without worrying that your hotshot buddy is going to lose you this he can brag about what good time he made. Remember that episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza did that? Still, the cell phone is a double-edged sword. In its own right, I always considered the older landline phone to be an intrusive device anyway. Don't you enjoy standing in some store line for 10 minutes? Then, when they're finally ready to take you, the phone rings and the call automatically trumps any customer who is there in the flesh. Remember saying to yourself, hey, I actually took the time to come down here. Why does some meatball get first priority over me just because he dialed a phone? Or you're in the middle of a heavy conversation with a friend and their phone rings. I'm sorry, but I really need to take this call. Or a bunch of people have gathered together to watch a video. The phone rings, and instead of pretending you are viewing this movie in a theater the way the good Lord intended it to be seen, somebody feels obligated to grab the phone. Once a friend of mine picked me up late for a ride to the airport. I almost missed my plane. Her excuse? The phone just wouldn't stop ringing this morning. When I had the unmitigated gall to ask why she bothered to answer the phone while running late, she said, I feel guilty if I don't pick up the phone. Quite a society we have become, conditioned to jump every time a bell rings. And then there are the solicitors who neither hear the word no nor offer the word salesman. Instead, they begin with, Mr. Siegel, how do 3 weeks in London sound? Sound good, huh? Enter from stage left, the cell phone. Now our daily situations of life can be interrupted about 100 times as much. They go off at the banks. They go off at restaurants. They go off in the middle of church. They go off in the middle of movie theaters. They go off in the middle of plays. When people pick them up, they do not talk. They shout. That's because we're used to the days when we spoke on a phone in the privacy of our home. We raised our voices to make sure we were heard on the other end, and our hot wind was not rude because we were not in a public place. Nothing more fun than waiting at a bank line behind somebody who's shouting into his phone. Sometimes the person is unaware of how loud he sounds. Other times, I suspect they enjoy feeling important as the rest of us witness the amorphous business deal being made right before our very eyes. You tell Phillips that I want that accounting at the overhead, and I want it today. The latest fashion, of course, is the earpiece. Now it just looks like somebody talking to himself. Got to tell you this, a couple of months ago, I walk into Taco Bell. The lady at the cash register looks me in the eye and says, may I take your order? So I start ordering. She raises her hand and says, not you, sir. You see, she was talking to a drive-through customer through the wonder of earpieces, and her tone made me feel like quite the fool. Silly me, a lady behind a counter stares at my face, asks for an order, and like a complete idiot who doesn't know any better, I start ordering. Once, well, in a movie theater, a cell phone rang from a guy sitting next to me. It was his wife. I should not have known that it was his wife, but I did know because the little discussion he had with Lammy Pie was impossible to miss. What do you want? I'm at the movies. I guess he must have felt she had some nerve calling him at such a time. Of course, he had the nerve to let his phone ring, pick it up, and talk while a movie was on. Sometimes people are surprised to discover that they are not the only ones in the theater. Newsflash! Often others are also in the room, and some of them would actually like to be able to watch the movie. A few years ago, I took my daughter to see My Fair Lady, the live play version at Lamb's Players Theater. As the overture started, a cell phone went off, and for some reason I'll never understand this side of heaven, these huckleberries are always sitting next to me. At least this time, the joker seemed to be aware that there were others in the theater and that he ought not to be on his cell phone. He was aware of that. Unfortunately, this burst of revelation did not encourage him to turn it off. He still took the call. I can't talk long because the show just started. Oh, yes. And now the phones don't ring anymore. They play colorful little jingles. My favorite is the sequence of melody that repeats itself 3 times, each one louder than the last. Yeah, that's it. But that's only one of thousands to choose from. Nothing more fun than preaching a sermon and suddenly hearing Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Bach from the third row. And so, let's not be too hard on Congresswoman Lee. After all, a congresswoman is supposed to represent the people. Her rudeness and cluelessness do that quite well. Still, the woman looks quite sane compared to PETA. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA is at it again. Now, I'm tempted to say that they have topped themselves, but actually that ship sailed long ago. Still, the latest stunt from the amiable advocates of anti-animal animosity warrants some discussion. Now, they are going after McDonald's Happy Meals. Yeah, PETA, going after Happy Meals. Okay, not the most nutritious menu for kids or anyone else, but then the health of human beings is not the concern of PETA anyway. Now they are standing outside McDonald's with unhappy meals. These include pictures of Ronald McDonald with a knife, portraying the clown as some kind of psychopathic chicken cow slasher and the possible brother of Freddy. Oh yes, and ketchup is pictured as blood. Cute, huh? Look, I do have problems with some of the inhumane ways in which animals are slaughtered, but I also have a problem with cruelty to children. Do kids really need to have nightmares because their parents tried to buy them a Happy Meal, for crying out loud? Aren't there one or two more important things going on in the world right now to channel our energy toward so that the children can be spared this utter nonsense? Besides, PETA objects to animals being used as food. Period. Oh, they spend time on talk shows highlighting the torture of animals in meat factories because they know this is the only way to build sympathy from an audience, which, if assurances of humane treatment were offered, have no problem eating meat. The real irony with PETA is not that they elevate animal life, but rather lower the value of human life. While this McDonald's episode demonstrates little concern for the emotional health of children, it is tame compared to PETA's former crusades. When Palestinian terrorists blow up people, PETA says nothing. But when those same terrorists blow up donkeys, PETA goes nuts! Nuts! And let's not forget the golden nugget of them all, a plate of fried chicken featured next to a picture of Auschwitz concentration camp with a caption reading, "The New Holocaust." See, here we go again with the Nazi comparison. So here's another flash. Real Nazis and people with Nazi-type philosophies are still poisoning our world. How can we ever educate a new generation into taking a stand against real Nazis when organizations like PETA are making everybody numb to the word Nazi? Nothing will water down what the authentic Nazis did more than making all meat eaters into Nazis. Since Happy Meals come with a prize, maybe a moral compass should be added. That way we can share at least part of the meal with our friends from PETA. Speaking of looking for a compass, any kind of compass, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is very concerned about global warming. Sharing such passion by making a speech in South Korea, his words sounded more dire than Cassandra of Troy. He said, "We have just 4 months, 4 months to secure the future of our planet." That's an exact quote. 4 months to secure the future of our planet. I found Charlton Heston in Soylent Green more convincing. Still, if you're wondering about the Secretary General's sincerity, I remind you that this genius also blamed Muslim violence in Darfur on global warming. I'm not kidding. You see, if not for the drying of the sub-Sahara, people would stop fighting over land. See the logic? Okay, now, somebody has to pose an obvious question here, so it might as well be me. Why isn't this man in a padded cell? And who instead do we put in padded cells these days? Well, we make a man like Ban Ki-moon, UN Secretary General. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, which likes to raise the question, where is our world headed?
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555, your arms are hanging limp at your side. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine doing that for you. In the year 6565, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too, from the bottom of a long glass tube. Whoa, whoa. In the year 7510, if God's a-coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. In the year 8510, God is gonna shake his mighty head. He'll either say, I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Whoa, whoa. In the year 9595, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taking everything this old earth can give.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound more beautiful.
Welcome back to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. I guess we've all heard the news by now. A Scottish judge released a Libyan terrorist responsible for blowing up a Pan-American plane many years ago, killing some 300 people. The man had been sentenced for life. The reason his sentence was abruptly cut short? The poor terrorist has colon cancer. Now, my sympathies go out to all of you who do have colon cancer, but not to terrorists. The logic here is he will soon die anyway. And so the overly zealous mercenary, as he's now thought of, was returned to Libya, where he actually received at the airport a hero's welcome. With few exceptions, the left does not understand why conservatives would not follow suit with compassion toward those who want to kill us. Meanwhile, conservatives ponder the realization that most people so eager to offer mercy to criminals are also pro-choice. They sleep well at nights, knowing that the compassion we bestow upon terrorists is never directed toward unborn babies. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, give us a call, 1-888-344-1170. We also take email questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. This is from Lorene in San Jose, commenting on the comment I made about the UN director telling us we have 4 months left to do something about global warming. She says, I like the padded cell comment. Nice touch. Concerning the blog version of Obama's Christianity, Laura in Anaheim writes, so right as always, thank you for the blogs. I frequently pass them on. Concerning PETA portraying Ronald McDonald as a slasher, Patty in Italy writes, Bob, this is so true. Don't these people have better uses for their time? It is just weird. The next letter is from Joel in San Diego, who wrote us a couple of weeks ago. He says, "Hi, Bob. Probably another question easily answered by fact and minor study. However, the internet isn't doing much justice. What is Hitler's involvement with the Jews? From what I've heard so far, they are a threat due to their position in banking. I wonder, though, if Islam had some effect here at all. I understand Hitler obviously had a strong belief in the Aryan lineage, but I'm curious to see if you have any more to the story. Thanks again, Joel." Good question, Joel. Hitler had no significant involvement with Islam. There were some Nazis that traveled over to the Middle East and got involved with the brand of Islam called Wahhabism, but that wasn't a main thrust of Hitler. He did receive bad grades as an art student from some Jewish professors in Austria. That, along with German history of anti-Semitism going back long before the time of Hitler, also influenced him. Anti-Semitism is still kind of a mystery. Hitler accused the Jews of being international bankers and international communists at the same time, two contradictory ideas. And then there was the whole Christ killer message to attract churchgoers. Spiritually, the explanation is simpler. Satan hates the Jews. Through the Jews, we got the Messiah who saves us from Satan. Through the Jews, we got the Bible. 1-888-344-1170. Let's go ahead, Cameron, to the phone. Stephen in North Park, welcome to our program.
Oh, hello, Bob.
How are you, my friend? It's been a while.
I know.
Nice to hear from you, as always.
You brought up such an interesting, it's a tremendous soup of interesting topics that you brought up, and you brought them up so fast, but I wanted to cover Nancy Pelosi.
Bless her dear little heart.
Yes, what she's done is she's set herself up as a sole arbiter of what's normal and rational, so that if you agree with her, then you're normal, you're rational, and you're a well-spoken individual.
How scary that woman is the barometer of what's normal and rational.
Exactly, but no, it's a matter of perception, not a matter of reality when you're dealing with these individuals. They play the media like a well-tuned musical instrument. So what she's doing by indicating that the people at the rallies are bringing swastikas and such is that all that oppose her are vicious street thug radicals and maniacs. Basically maniacs, racist maniacs.
And ironically, that kind of lying and propaganda is what the early Nazis actually did do.
Bingo! Oh, you took the words right from my mouth and didn't even get your hand wet. So yeah, she's doing the exact same gutter politician routine that, well, both international socialism and national socialism use the same thing. They attack the individual because it's easier to hurt the individual than it is to hurt the institution. They can't attack conservatism, so they'll attack the little people that show up.
Well, it's in debating circles, that's called an ad hominem. When you've lost the argument in terms of ideas, then you resort to the name calling.
Now here's my question, all right? In the long run, which do you think is more corrosive to the civil society and to a democratic republic? The book Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, or the book Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky? And I'll leave you with that one, my friend.
Okay. Well, they're probably a photo finish. Stephen, it's always great hearing from you. Take care. I appreciate these encouraging comments, comments encouraging my point of view. I want you to know, though, that the comments are not always so encouraging. This next one that I'm going to read to you, I guarantee, will make up for every positive comment you have ever heard on my program. It's from a man who calls himself D. Baltz, the initial D. I don't know what it stands for. Baltz being his last name, B-A-L-T-Z. That's how he identified himself by email. He says, "Mr. Siegel, as a Christian, I am extremely offended by much of the deception and misinformation you publish on your blog and broadcast on your show here in San Diego. Mr. Siegel, I have no problem with someone having a strong political point of view. Secular radio talk show hosts, both left and right, are entertainers and expected to use hyperbole to excite their listeners and improve their ratings. But you, sir, claim to be devout Christian, and because of this, I hold you to a higher moral standard. Week after week on radio and day after day on your blog, you make statements that are disingenuous at best and blatant lies at worst. Let me give you a few examples. This past Sunday, in the middle of your discussion about the town halls, you said, 'This host is a Democrat.' I have heard you describe your political philosophy a number of times, and you have never described yourself as a Democrat. In fact, you have called yourself conservative many times. From your blog, you say, between hate speech laws and fairness doctrines regulating talk radio, Obama may just succeed in shutting down all opposition. Now, first of all, we both know Obama can do no such thing. Even if we assume the worst, the legislation would have to come from Congress to do these things. Obama could not do it by fiat. Even more importantly, to imply that President Obama wants to shut down all opposition simply flies in the face of common sense. I suppose you think that Gates and LaHood and other Republicans in his administration would keep quiet if such a thing were planned. You are too intelligent to sincerely believe that. Mr. Bush would not allow opposition into his town halls, as is well documented on October 15, 2004. This was published by News from Channel 8 Portland, Oregon. It said three Medford school teachers were threatened with arrest and thrown out of the President Bush rally at the Jackson County Fairgrounds Thursday night after they showed up wearing T-shirts with the slogan, "Protect Our Civil Liberties." Did you also accuse President Bush of trying to silence all opposition? Mr. Siegel, half-truths and lies by omission are still immoral. You exhibit behavior that is not moral and anti-Christian while at the same time wrapping yourself in the cloak of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Shame on you, sir. Yours in Christ, D. Baltz. Okay, now, just so you know, when a Christian writes a scathing letter like this, and I have been getting a lot of negative letters from Christians who are rebuking me because they're Obama supporters. When a Christian writes a letter like this and signs it, yours in Christ, or as I sometimes read it, I said this in love, it does not change my opinion of the letter. It does not change my opinion of the person. Neither does it excuse the rudeness. This man called me a liar, and he called me immoral. If you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you know that I am very respectful of people who disagree with my ideas. That is true of the way I treat my guests, callers, debate opponents, and dissenters by way of email. However, and it's a significant however, there is a difference between attacking an idea and attacking a person. When instead of merely disagreeing with me, somebody chooses to resort to name-calling and vicious accusations, I will defend myself. Make no mistake about that. Now, generally, when I receive an email like this, I do not even respond to the person by email. For one thing, it was sent to my radio show email listing, and it's understood by those who send in that I read those over the air and respond to those over the air. In this particular case, I chose to respond in person and over the air, and I must say, some good things have since come out of it. Believe it or not, I may just become friends with this guy. But first, in the interest of full disclosure, I do want you to hear the email I sent him, and I'll tell you why. I want my audience to know that when I get comments such as these, you're not going to receive that stereotype milquetoast Christian response. Okay, brother. Well, thanks for sharing. I'll receive that as admonition and obey it as unto the Lord. No. Untrue accusations are untrue accusations, and I will treat them as such. Here's the letter I sent Mr. Baltz. Dear Mr. Baltz, I will address the main body of your letter on a future radio show. It will depend on my guest schedule, as I do not have time to read emails every week. I'm sure you understand. I will say one thing to you right now, however. I am a registered Democrat, and when you accuse me of lying, you simply do not know what you are talking about. That kind of snap judgment makes you a liar. When you do so in the name of Christianity, well, then I must echo your own words. Shame on you, sir. Evidently, you do not listen to my show or read my blogs as often as you claim, for if you did, you would have heard or read my explanation many times as to why I have remained a Democrat, even though I continue to vote Republican. The Democratic Party historically was not at odds with conservative ideas. In fact, many of us who called ourselves liberals back in the 60s have seen the Democrats forsake even true liberal ideas. Many frustrated Democrats chose to leave the party. I chose not to. That is my choice and my business, and it does not make me a liar. Below is a link to a much older blog where you can see that I offered my explanation long ago. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You invoke the name of the very God who commands you not to make assumptions about what goes on in somebody else's heart. Bob Siegel. That's what I sent to him, and I'm going to respond to more of it when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Right before we went to the break, I read a scathing letter from Dee Baltz, a Christian who took issue at some of the things I've said about Obama. He accused me of being a liar because, well, one of the reasons he offered was that I'm lying when I say that I believe Obama wants to shut down free speech. He also accused me of being a liar by calling myself a Democrat, since I'm obviously more conservative than the stereotype image of a Democrat. I read you back an email that I sent him personally, where I defended myself, and I don't think there's anything wrong with defending yourself, by the way. I know there's always Christians and others that say, oh, I see you're getting very defensive. And I'd like to say, oh, okay, no, you can make any comment you want, but I don't dare defend myself. You can make any accusation, I don't dare defend myself. Is that how it works? I don't let people get away with that. However, the only reason I read that letter to you over the air is that I wanted to be honest about how angry that email made me and about how inappropriate it was. Since I already sent it to Mr. Baltz, he has already responded. And I must say, since I'm an honest guy, since then, Mr. Baltz and I developed a much more constructive dialogue. He has since apologized for the tone of his first letter. And folks, an apology goes a long way with me. Very few people find the courage or humility to search their hearts and offer an apology. And so I commend Mr. Baltz for doing so. And now I will do as I promised him, respond to the rest of his letter. Is Obama trying to suppress free speech? Well, going back to a point I made earlier on the show, I am dismissing his analogy to George Bush comment. I mean, look, if you've been following this show, you know I was very critical about George Bush in many ways while he was president, although I'm sure I liked him a whole lot more than Mr. Baltz. It is common for politicians to try crowd control when they speak. I had not heard about this particular incident he brought up in the email, but I do know that frequently Bush was interrupted verbally while he was trying to talk, and that might have been their concern. They might have seen the t-shirts. They might have said, these people are going to get disruptive, but I don't know. And so, Mr. Baltz, I'm just going to assume you are right. Let me put it this way, and I'll be as clear and direct as I can. If Bush went overboard and tried to literally suppress free speech, he, too, was wrong. Okay? But today we are not talking about Bush. We are talking about Obama. Now, Mr. Baltz starts by saying Obama's suppression of free speech would be impossible, even if he wanted to, because Congress would stop him. Really? How exactly? The Republicans don't have the votes. The cabinet members that he mentioned have zero authority. When you're in the president's cabinet, you advise him. If he doesn't like your advice, he doesn't have to listen to it, and he could fire you at any time. Cabinet has zip political control. As for the Democrats in our Congress, many of them are every bit as eager to stop free speech. Already, the House of Representatives passed a hate crimes bill, which is only a thin disguise for hate speech. In this law, pastors who speak against homosexuality can be prosecuted if some criminal does an act of violence and then claims afterwards that the pastor's sermon was his inspiration. This is chilling. A similar bill sent before the Senate was quickly added as an amendment to a military budget bill. Nice little trick, making it more difficult for Republicans to reject since they don't want to be viewed as anti-military. Never mind that the hate crimes amendment has nothing to do with the military whatsoever. And folks, Obama has promised to sign this disgusting piece of legislation. In Canada, they have already gone from hate crime to hate speech. And militant gay activists in the United States have openly, and I mean openly, stated their agenda to make speech against homosexuality against the law. Obama has embraced the militant gay agenda every step of the way and has never spoken against it. Now, about the Fairness Doctrine, an attempt to regulate talk radio. Much of our current Congress is all for this hideous doctrine. People like Nancy Pelosi, Dick Durbin, and John Kerry have all voiced enthusiastic support. A Republican bill that would outlaw its return has met resistance and little chance of passing. Now, I know Obama says he is against the Fairness Doctrine, but who are we kidding? Obama is very good at saying one thing and doing just the opposite. Obama also says he has no desire to take over banks. Obama says he has no desire to take over the auto industry. Obama says he has no desire to grow government. I don't know how he makes these comments with a straight face, but he does. Obama does not call himself a socialist. Oh, I'm not a socialist. I'm not a socialist. I believe we should take money from the rich and redistribute it. I believe we should have the power to tell banks what kinds of loans to give out and what to pay their COs. And I believe we should tell car companies what kinds of smog-free cars to make. But no, I am not a socialist. Folks, the only evidence that Obama is not a socialist is that he chooses not to call himself one. Besides, that's only considered a bad word if a conservative calls him a socialist. When liberals call themselves socialists, that's not a problem. Even Newsweek finally came out with a magazine cover with the headline, "We are all socialists now." Okay, so now Obama says he's against the Fairness Doctrine. Whew, what a relief. We'll talk more about Obama and the Fairness Doctrine when we return.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to our program. I've been reading through an email by a man who calls himself D. Baltz. He accused me of being a liar, of absolutely knowing that Obama cannot and will not and has no intention of shutting down free speech. I've been responding to it. If you just joined us, I do want to mention that Mr. Baltz has since apologized for his tone by email, and we've promised to have a more constructive dialogue with each other. So I hope this response of mine is constructive. And I mentioned right before I went to the break that Obama actually says he's against the Fairness Doctrine. Now, our Democratic Congress is all for it. He says he's against it. But you got to listen to these guys and listen to the way they describe they're against something. This is a statement from the Obama campaign in June 2008. "Senator Obama does not support reimposing the Fairness Doctrine on broadcasters," said Press Secretary Michael Ortiz in an email to BNC late Wednesday. He considers this debate to be a distraction from the conversation we should be having about opening up the airwaves and modern communications to as many diverse viewpoints as possible. That is why Senator Obama supports media ownership caps, network neutrality, public broadcasting, as well as increasing minority ownership of broadcasting and print outlets. Let's get this straight. He's against the fairness doctrine, but he likes media ownership caps, network neutrality. He wants to open up the media to diverse viewpoints. It's already open to diverse viewpoints in the free market. But it seems the conservative viewpoints have more listeners, and the left is livid over this. The only way government can open it up more is to insist that more time be given to other viewpoints. Otherwise, what do we mean by open it up to more viewpoints? It sounds like a lot of control over the media to me. In fact, it doesn't sound much different than the fairness doctrine, does it? But don't worry, be of good cheer. It won't be the fairness doctrine because Obama won't call it the fairness doctrine. The Federal Communications Commission also has a loosely defined rule called localism, which requires stations to, quote unquote, serve the interests of their local communities in order to hold on to their broadcast licenses. Obama, who recently put in his own FCC chairman, now has a chance to define localism his own way, since it was loosely defined anyway. On September 20th, 2007, Obama submitted a pro-localism written statement to an FCC hearing at the Chicago headquarters of Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr.'s Operation Push. 1 month later, Obama wrote a letter to the chairman, Martin, stating, "The commission has failed to further the goals of diversity in the media and promote localism." But that's not Obama's only FCC appointment. Get a load out of this one. Obama recently appointed Mark Lloyd chief diversity officer. Okay, we're not going to have a fairness doctrine. We're just going to have a chief diversity officer at the Federal Communications Commission. Lloyd has a long track record as a Democrat activist. He is known for various strategies to censor conservative media under the guise of local accountability. In 2007, he co-wrote a report calling for the restoration of local and national caps on the ownership of commercial radio stations and fines for commercial radio station owners if their stations didn't air enough progressive content. Such fines would be distributed to liberal competitors with lower ratings and only a handful of listeners. We'll return to the Bob Siegel Show. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170, KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I've been reading and responding to an email by a gentleman who said I was lying. Now, he has since retracted that. He has since changed his tone. But he is not sold when I say that Obama wants to silence free speech. I already mentioned how they're doing that with hate crime legislation. As far as the Fairness Doctrine, the Congress has said they're all for it. Obama said he was against it. But then we're looking at some of the people that he's putting in place, such as Mark Lloyd, Chief Diversity Officer of the FCC. Says Lloyd, our conclusion is that the gap between conservative and progressive talk radio is the result of multiple structural problems in the U.S. regulatory system, particularly the complete breakdown of the public trustee concept of broadcast, the elimination of clear public interest requirements for broadcasting, and the relaxation of ownership rules. Now, in a blog post, the LCCR, standing for Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, sponsored by our friend George Soros, praised the selection of Lloyd, claiming that he will, quote-unquote, help the FCC to develop communications policy that will increase media diversity and address the needs of low-income people, women, minorities, and people with disabilities. They said, we call for ownership rules that we think will create greater local diversity of programming, news, and commentary, and we call for more localism by putting teeth into the licensing rules. He wrote in an article on CAP's website titled, Forget the Fairness Doctrine, but we do not call for a return to the Fairness Doctrine. And now I'm reading from the magazine The American Spectator. Senior FCC staff working for Acting Federal Communications Commissioner Michael Copps held meetings last week with policy and legislative advisors to House Energy and Commerce Committee Chairman Henry Waxman to discuss ways the committee can create openings for the FCC to put in place a form of the Fairness Doctrine without actually calling it such. Waxman is also interested, say sources, in looking at how the internet is being used for content and free speech purposes. Ah, that's great. They're going to go after the internet now, too. It's all about diversity in media, says a House Energy staffer familiar with the meetings. Does one radio station or one station group control four of the five most powerful outlets in one community? Do four stations in one region carry Rush Limbaugh and nothing else during the same time slot? Does one heavily trafficked internet site present one side of an issue and not link to sites that present alternative views? These are some of the questions the chairman is thinking about right now, and we are going to have an FCC that will finally have the people in place to answer them. So it sounds like he's bringing back that same old skunk. He's just going to call it something different. I'll say this, though, folks. In the meantime, it's not altogether impossible that Obama will switch gears and just call this cotton-picking thing the Fairness Doctrine anyway. I mean, when Chris Wallace interviewed David Axelrod, top advisor to President Obama, about the Fairness Doctrine, he dodged the question and said it would be worked out between Obama and the new FCC president. Now, if they're really against it, why did he dodge the question? And Robert Gibbs, the press secretary, has been asked about it twice, each time refusing to comment. Finally, if Congress passes a bill calling for the doctrine, Obama could always just sign it, saying it was not his place to override Congress. Remember also, the Obama campaign tried to shut down Milt Rosenberg's radio show featuring National Review's Stanley Kurtz to talk about Obama's connections with the terrorist Bill Ayers. And within a week of his televised question from Joe the Plumber, Joe the Plumber, by an amazing coincidence, was audited by the IRS. Obama has gone out of his way to tell people they should stop listening to programs like Rush Limbaugh and Come Together in Unity. And just today, Obama said it's a right-wing conspiracy that's objecting to his health care. But I'm sorry, there is nothing, absolutely nothing about this man which suggests to me that he embraces free speech, but I embrace free speech, so I'll be back next week. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.